Here we are again, Dustin. By the way, yes. I have no clue what day it is because I'm so high. No, I just don't know when I'm posting this, but it's sure. in the middle of April in the midst of the latest content blitz. Whee! Yay. Because I wanted our 500th episode to happen around the show's anniversary.
Mm.
And I was like, I could do that if I surge April a little bit. So that's what we're doing, everybody. That's the why.
All right.
That's the big why. Just some artificiality.
Yes.
So sometimes life requires some artificiality and some showmanship and just a little bit of tipping the scales and kind right. of warping your perception of what is. You know what I'm saying?
A little bit of gaslighting goes a long way.
Yeah. Speaking of warping reality, let's talk about American Fiction.
Hey.
I'm throwing rocks tonight.
Yeah.
You guys are dead in the water.
How did you come to write this book?
What really struck me was that too few books were about my people. Where are our stories? Where's our representation?
Would you give us the pleasure of reading an excerpt?
Yo, Sharonda, girl, you be pregnant again? If I is, Ray Ray is gonna be a real father this time around. Thank you.
Monk, your books are good, but they're not popular. Editors, they want a black book.
They have a black book. I'm black, and it's my book.
You know what I mean.
Look at what they published. Look at what they expect us to write.
I just want to rub their noses in it.
I be standing outside in the night.
Deadbeat dads, rappers, crack. You said you wanted black stuff. That's black, right?
I see what you're doing.
We sold your book.
No.
We believe Mr. Lee has written a bestseller.
It's a joke.
The most lucrative joke you've ever told.
Now, is Stag a pseudonym?
Yeah.
Mr. Lee can't use his real name.
Is this based on your actual life?
Yeah, you think some bitch-ass college boy can come up with that shit?
No, I don't.
Can I ask what you were in for? Was it murder?
You said that, not me.
They ran 300,000 copies.
Your books changed people's lives.
They're offering $4 million for the movie rights.
Yes!
The dumber I behave, the richer I get.
Tell it like it is.
This has gone too far.
Stag Arley is still on the run from authorities.
You haven't done anything. It's not like they can arrest you.
Tell it like it is.
Wish I could go back to not selling books.
Is it bad to cater to people's tastes?
People want to love you, Monk. You should let them love all of you.
There's already so much buzz because of the movie deal.
Michael B. Jordan is circling.
We want to put him on the cover in one of those scarves, I guess you would call them, tied around his head.
A do-rag?
Do-rag, that's it. Do-rag and a tank top with the muscles showing.
Yeah, something called the fire department.
Okay, Dustin, I'll let you take us through American Fiction tonight.
Sweet.
Because I'm so gracious and good.
Well, hey, I appreciate that. Thank you for the generosity.
Thank you for not talking for a minute.
So American Fiction, this film is written, directed by Cord Jefferson, stars Jeffrey Wright and Sterling K. Brown, Tracy Ellis Ross, and a bunch of other people. It's a really good movie. Like I found myself really enjoying this, and laughing out loud at it, mm-hmm. which I think is kind of rare, for me. And so like, American Fiction, is about a guy named Monk, and Monk, I forget his real name,
it's the Thelonious Ellison. So that's why that's why they call him Monk.
Yes, Thelonious Ellison. So Monk is a writer, and he is sick and tired of seeing the African-American story presented in stereotypical ways, and he's very sort of weary with writing books that don't really make it big. Like, he's writing books, they're not popping off the shelves, and he's frustrated at what is popping off the shelves. So sort of as a lark, one night he decides to write a very stereotypical African-American story, and wouldn't you know it, the publishers love it and they really want him to make this a big thing. And, you know, it's flying off the shelves. And for the first time in his life, he has a bona fide hit.
Bestseller.
A bestseller. But it is at the expense of all the things that he thinks is moral and ethical and positive for it, you know, himself and his community. And so it's sort of the wrestling of that. It's a really funny premise. Like that just in and of itself is a funny premise. And I could see the writers like sitting down and going, you know, what would be funny is if a guy wrote a book that's a bestseller, but he hates it. Mm-hmm. And like, that's just an interesting, funny premise. And then to make it about this specifically, I think is a really smart way to go about it. And of course, Jeffrey Wright is fantastic. You know, he's always great. You know him as a little bit of like a character actor. He pops up here and there doing little things. And most notably recently as Commissioner Gordon in the Batman films, and Felix Leiter in the Daniel Craig, James Bond films. But you've seen him in a bunch of things and he's fantastic and he's fantastic in this. And I don't know why he doesn't lead more often. Also in the cast, you know, I mentioned Sterling K. Brown. He's great in this. He plays a very, conflicted role, or a guy who's kind of in search of himself, but also, you know, trying to, just trying to be himself. And then, you know, other cast members like Issa Rae and Erica Alexander, who I have not seen in a long time. So I'm glad she's back. And Keith David even, and like, these are just fantastic actors in great roles. Even if, you know, like Keith David's is kind of small, like it's funny and it's poignant and, yeah, man, it's just a funny movie, and it has something to say, and you got this feeling, or at least I did when I watched it, that this is a comedy, like through and through, but it's a comedy with a purpose. It's not just a comedy for the sake of laughter. It's like, let's hold a mirror up to something that is genuinely absurd, that truly happens, and kind of like make you laugh at it and also feel a little bit indicted at your consumption of it.
Yeah. Your complicity.
And yeah, exactly. And so, it's a good movie, and I had a good time with it. And, I saw this on the big screen, which is great, with a big crowd, and they were, you know, eating it up. And, I liked this movie and I do recommend it. And we can talk more about specifics here in a minute. It's been a while since I've seen it. I saw it back in the fall. So it's been quite some time, but we can chat it.
Dustin, what'd you think? With his first run privilege.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I saw this with a free trial of MGM Plus again.
Hey,
fooled that service with the same email address. They better tighten up. I was like, I don't think this is going to work. And I was like, hey, you're in. I was like, wow.
Whoa. Okay.
I showed up with glasses and a mustache. I was like, one ticket, please.
And they're like, hey, the fake mustache isn't necessary.
Yeah. Someone who looks like you, but someone with a red mustache was here last time. I loved American Fiction. It hit a lot of marks for me. I really love movies about writers, for one, as you and I, two people who write, it always, whenever Hollywood makes a movie about writing, I'm always like, oh, let's see what the latest is.
Right.
I love Jeffrey Wright. And I love the whole cast, and I love movies about bullshit. Mm-hmm. Which is essentially part of what this movie is about. It's about bullshit within an industry, the bullshit of the way certain art is consumed and certain pseudo art is consumed, and how you could get by making pseudo art because you know how to play to people who don't know any better than to furiously lap up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bullcrap.
Yeah.
So movies like that are refreshing. I fully recommend it. I think again, it satisfies as just a straight comedy. And then I think it satisfies, obviously, on a deep thematic level, as not, I want to say an expose, but it's a movie that paints it's layered because it's not just, hey, this is wrong. And then some sing-songy ending, or it paints a both are true portrait of an industry and social truth, which is that stories are commoditized. Yes. Some people play right into that market. Yes. Mm. And it's gross. Yes. Or maybe, is it gross? It sort of sparks a discussion, and a discussion that is had by characters, and it's, you know, personified by this conversation between two writers. I really enjoyed thinking about that, because obviously, like, you explore, like, you've got Jeffrey Wright's character, you've got Monk, who is an academic. He's very frustrated with political correctness, as is evidenced by the first scene of a white student of his has a problem hearing the N-word in class. Yeah. And he's like, okay, well, this is a, you know, and he yells at her, that whole scene happens. So he's very frustrated with it. And like you said, he's very smart. He's a good writer. The problem is that he is writing stuff that is so niche and dense that it doesn't sell a lot of copies, enough copies to make him rich, you know? And it's like, that's like the worst kind of insult. Like, you're too good of a writer for the public to be aware of you and for you to make a living off of writing books.
Yes.
It's like, Jesus. Like,
I'd
rather you tell me I'm a horrible writer. It's like, no, you're good. You're too good for the population at large.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Oh, yeah. Shoot me.
I know.
And so, he's frustrated because he sees authors, getting rich and selling the Black experience that isn't the nuanced and truthful one, but it's the melodramatic or commercialized one that guilty white people really love to praise. I loved all the scenes where he has to pretend to be the author, his author. What's his name? Stagar Lee.
Yeah.
He has to pretend to be that guy on the phone, and he has to do it in person at one point, and just watching him having to play like how he feels like white. What does a white executive want
to hear?
Wants this convict, this ex-convict to sound like and look like and act like. And
right.
My favorite, like when he answers the phone, they're talking to the lady, and he's like, it's like, Mr. Lee, are you there? And he's like, yes, I'm here. And and he's like, no, you have to be him. And he's like, yeah, God damn it, motherfucker. And she was like, ah, yes, I thought. And I laughed so loud. I laughed so hard.
Yes.
I thought it was so funny.
Yes.
It's a really, really, really great film. I'm really glad I watched it. And I think people should talk about it.
Yeah, totally. I agree. And it's one of those things where you know exactly what they're making fun of, because you yourself, like we on this show, have probably reviewed films and that we've watched. And it's one of those things where you're like, you and I can't say what the African-American experience is, right? Like we have no idea, but what we can do is live vicariously and assume that we know it because, because we've seen movies.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what all of these executives and everybody are doing. They're like, well, I've seen what Black people are like in movies. Yeah. So they must be that way.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what Monk is up against, is he's like, I want to paint a more nuanced picture of like people as people and not as like this stereotypical thing that you think we are. And that's just such a good point to make. I mean, it's an indictment of us as consumers, but it's an indictment of Hollywood. I mean, this obviously takes place in the book world, but it's very, you know, apropos for film that Hollywood executives are the same way. It's, oh, if we can tell a story that feels like it, you know, is a Black story, even if it's completely fabricated. It's like the executives are saying, oh, that feels black to us, but it's just a bunch of white people saying what it feels, what feels black.
Yeah.
And that doesn't like it, the movie just calls that out like blatantly.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it kind of calls out, creators, of color who cater to that, and say like, why are you catering to that? We can do better than that. And, you know, I've seen that in a ton of different spaces. I mean, we've talked about this before, like Christian movies often settle for just whatever the stereotypical thing is, rather than doing anything.
What does our target audience want?
Insightful. It's what it's not even what do they want. It's what do we think they want, or what are we going to tell them that they want? Yeah. And that's all it is. And you're not actually presenting life as it is. You're presenting a form of it, but you're controlling what that form is based off your limited experience. And you're controlling creators of color and saying like, no, your story has to be about this. Like, I forget what it is. There's something in the film who says it, but somebody says like blatantly tells him your story isn't black enough.
I think his agent tells him that that's what the publisher said.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, why, how can you say that?
Yeah.
Like
I'm black. You know, it's my book. It's a black book.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's just such a good point to make. And I think anytime you can make a good point through comedy and make it absurd and push it to like 11, mm-hmm. that's just so ripe for actual, like creating actual change or like, at least discussion.
I think that same, the agent character, I think he also says like, white people don't want the truth though. They want the truth that makes them feel less guilt, the least guilty or something.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially considering the film, while its main character is saying, I want to present the black experience and black people as just people and not as a monolith or a stereotype. The film does show you that in the course of the story. Monk is, they're all like, most of these characters are like upper middle class people. Like Monk is a professor and a writer. He's an academic. His brother's a plastic surgeon. His sister's like a doctor, some kind of doctor, like a pediatrician, surgeon, something. I don't know. She's like a doctor. And, actually, all three of them are doctors. I think they point that out. He has a doctorate.
Yes.
But like the woman later, what's the actress's name? Eric Alexander's character is a lawyer.
Yep.
I mean, like all the main characters in this movie that are black are like, have like really good careers and are smart and not a stereotype at all. And so the movie accomplishes Jeffrey Wright's goal just in the course of telling its story, which is something brilliant that it does.
Yeah. All of these, what's great about it is, and this is what every screenwriter should strive for no matter what, is all of these characters are unique to themselves, right? You can't like, if you just showed me a line of dialogue on the page and it's either Sterling K. Brown or Jeffrey Wright's character, it'd be very easy to tell who it is, right? Because they're very different characters. And that's something you should always strive for. And that's something this film really succeeds at, is we're not going to show you, one African-American character played by seven people. We're going to show you seven different characters.
Yeah.
And that's great.
As tends to be the case, like you go, oh, like that was a cool film. Like what's the history of this story? And it's based on a book. And you're like, oh, okay. Of course it's based on a book.
Yeah.
The book is from 2001.
Yeah.
And you go, wow, like this story. And for me, it was at least like, I mean, obviously I would have heard of this book. I was 12, but like, but like, I imagine at a certain point, a certain age, you go, why haven't I heard of this? And it's probably for the exact reason spelled out in the book, which is it's not commercial enough. It's not, it's not simple enough. It's, you know, it's almost hilarious that I have not heard of it for that exact reason.
Yeah, exactly.
I just thought it was really good. The book is called Erasure by Percival Everett. And a lot of stuff, I was reading the quick synopsis of it, a lot of stuff like happens in the movie exactly as is. Like the idea that Monk is trying to like expose this whole charade by pushing the publishers in more and more extreme positions, like asking for more money, or I think he says, I want to change the book's title to Fuck.
Mm-hmm.
And his agent's like, what are you doing? And he's like,
yeah,
this is stupid. It's time to end this. And they're like,
yeah,
we love it. And he's like, oh my God.
Right. Yes. Yes. He can't do any wrong. Yeah.
And then someone in production design had to make that cover.
Yes.
I wish I had a copy of that book for my shelf. I imagine that was part of like the wrap gifts. Everyone got a copy of Fuck.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably.
It looks like the font, it looks like a Kurt Vonnegut novel, just with like the way it's written.
Yep.
Yeah. I think the story, so the book, then obviously the story is brilliant. The movie is a really great adaptation of it. I really loved the funeral, the funeral scene, or he's reading from the little card, and that guy, I think you probably saw it in like a promo, cause I think, I saw it subsequently, like in a YouTube ad. The guy walks through and you're like, are those human remains? And he's like, you can't dump those here. Shut the fuck up, Philip, before I get over there and beat your ass. And he's like, you can't talk to me like that. And then Jeffrey Wright turns around. And he's like, get the fuck out of here, Philip.
Are those human remains? You guys have a permit for that?
Shut the fuck up, Philip.
Cliff, you don't talk to me like that.
You want me to beat your ass?
I'm just...
Fuck out of here, Philip. I will eat your sweater vest for dinner.
Always been a... fucking dude.
Which he doesn't, I thought this was going to happen, but just as an aside, one of my favorite, I hate ADR in movies.
Yeah.
I didn't really hear much of it in this, but there's ADR in every movie. And every time it happens, I'm always like, ADR.
Yep.
But my favorite ADR always makes me laugh. It has made me laugh for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
Is when a character turns around after like being talked to in a way, and you just hear them go, asshole. And it never matches
right. Yes.
I thought that was about to happen with Mr. Man on the beach being told to fuck off and go away. I thought I was going to hear asshole off screen.
Yes.
I was primed for it. It didn't happen.
No.
Which I award Cord Jefferson then for having minimal ADR in this movie, because
yes, there you go.
Just, it's one of those things in movies where you watch it and you're like, how are we not good enough at this now to avoid it? It's one of those like patchwork parts of movies that is always so broke ass sounding, no matter who directs it. I've heard it in Scorsese movies. I'm always like, Jesus, y'all.
Yep. Yep.
We can't, this is the best we can do.
Right. Oh, it drives me crazy.
It never sounds good.
Yes. And it drives me crazy when they're using the audio from another take or something, and you're seeing it over the shoulder, and the character clearly isn't actually speaking.
Not talking at all.
You hear them. It's like, I pick up on that every time, and I'm like, oh.
I have to, as soon as I see it, I have to go, oh, I guess I'll just look at what I'm supposed to be looking at.
Yes, exactly. I guess I just have to ignore that flaw.
I tell myself if I ever directed a movie, it'd be like the most technically clean movie ever made, because I'd be hyper. It would be completely uninteresting, but there'd be zero mistakes like that in it.
Zero continuity mistakes.
Yeah. This movie did a pretty good job of that, though. But
yep. Yep.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about any spoilers? Do you want to go further?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we recommend the movie. It's on MGM Plus, but you could rent it too. And I think you should. I think it'd be worth it. But I will say MGM Plus will not check your email. So if you've done it once and you're like, I don't know, Conrad, who's the lightning can't strike twice. Yes, it can. It totally can strike twice. All right. Let's talk about spoilers.
Okay.
What is this?
Deadbeat dads, rappers, crack, and black, right?
Nobody's gonna publish this.
Just wanna rub their noses in it.
We love it.
What?
It is very,
black?
Yes, that's it. I'm happy you said it and not me.
We think it is gonna be a bestseller.
I'm sure white people on the Hamptons will delight in it.
Yeah, we will. It's gonna be huge.
Can you stick around and help with mother?
I gotta get home.
It's 8 in the morning.
I'm not flying the fucking plane, bro.
Just, this movie's so funny.
Yeah.
I We didn't talk about his mother at all. Leslie Uggams. She was so good.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
I wasn't sure at what point in the movie, like, oh, is this character going to die? And she, I don't think she even dies by the end of the film, does she? No, she just keeps on going.
Yep.
But it's the sister who dies, Tracy Ellis Ross, who has like an aneurysm or something.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly, but I remember that scene.
Yeah, they're just like having brunch or something.
Yeah, and she just kind of like freezes, and you're like, what's happening?
She has like a chest pain, and you're like, oh, she's got a health issue. And then it's like, as soon as they showed like her shots of like her feet, like of her being resuscitated.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, she's about to die. Yeah.
And then she does, and you're like, I did not see that coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's a great catalyst for all of the things that Monk will, you know, do throughout, because she was such a voice for him, like a sounding board. And she was like, for better or worse, like, you know, his relationship with his brother, with Sterling K. Brown's character, is not nearly as solid as his relationship with her.
Right.
And like throughout the film, that may change a little bit, but like, as the story begins, they're certainly at least a little at odds. Yeah, so it's an interesting choice, because it very easily could have been the mother, and you tug on the heartstrings with, you know, her having, you know, her issues that she has throughout the film, both with, you know, I mean, she's aging for sure,
right.
But it's what, some dementia type stuff.
She has Alzheimer's, yeah.
Yeah, and so it was, you know, it would be a very easy thing to go that route. But yeah, they didn't, and that I give them credit for it, because that was completely unexpected to me. And I don't know, maybe some people saw it coming. I didn't.
You tend to see like the aging parent, you know, coming, like, oh, our mother's going to die, and that's part of what we're going to be dealing with, because we want to have all this sibling drama,
right?
But it's like their sibling drama gets hashed out pretty quickly, and they're mostly at peace with it, and then boom, she dies, and it's good for the plot, because she was the one, she was like the point of contact for, you know, taking care of their mom. And now it's even harder for our protagonist, because now we don't even have her help.
Right. So now he's got to take care of her, because Sterling K. Brown's not going to do it.
Yep.
And
he's probably the least qualified to do it too.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you think of the way the movie ends with like the multiple, like the ending within an ending that he's suggesting to Adam Brody?
It's an interesting choice. And I remember when we screened it, the audience, it was almost like they were split.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them enjoyed it, and some of them, I think, didn't quite understand what had happened.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I got to give them credit. I mean, I think it was an interesting ending, and you know, again, something that I didn't necessarily predict, which is nice.
Yeah, I think it was, I think exactly what happened. The desired effect was achieved for me, where he goes up and he grabs the award and he's about to make the confession, probably make a big speech or something.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that I'm anticipating the reaction of the Issa Rae character, like hearing Monk explain why he did what he did. And then, like, you know, the one where he gets shot up, and then so I like it. You wonder, like, how did it end? You know, because how did it end in reality? And I was thinking about this earlier today, and it's like, well, we at least know that people know. Well, we know is that Adam Brody knows what happened, because now he's talking to him, and he has the movie deal. So we don't know if he went up there and accepted the award, or if he made the speech, in which case it's not worth us seeing, because we know what he's going to say. Or if he never went up there and the award went unaccepted, and he later just told Adam Brody, like, look, I'm Stagg Arley. Like, can we work together? All the endings would say something different about his character. But what we know about him now is that he is at least accepted to an extent that he has to work within the system that he is given in order to make a living and and have a career, which is, you know, writing, because the movie ends kind of like a bittersweet note with him having felt like he made this compromise in a way. But I almost saw it as like he looks over at the actor and it's the guy who's dressed as like a slave. He's like listening to music and he gives him like the peace sign. My interpretation of that was almost like that guy being like, hey, I've got a job, you know,
it's a living.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was the vibe I got from it. And not necessarily that he should like give up his crusade, but like that mixed morality that I was talking about where, yes, you're right about all this, but it takes more than just one angry writer to sort of change a system. And in the meantime, you need to make a living, push for integrity where you can, but you know, as it's a much more nuanced and large topic than we have time for tonight. But the idea being that sometimes the best thing you can do to create change is to be within the system that you wish to change, rather than, you know, with moral indignation, storming out of it and saying, I shall not be a part of this anymore. It's almost easier to do that because you get to keep all your integrity and you get to say, I didn't tolerate one more day working that way. It's a lot harder, but more realistic to say, yeah, it sucks, but it's getting a little better.
Yeah. And I think it's an understanding of like, this is currently the way that it is. I'm going to push back, but I'm not going to let it under my skin anymore.
Yeah.
And so it's maybe the idea of like, look, yeah, there are people and they're going to tell their stories that aren't honest, and they're, you know, playing to negative stereotypes. But at the end of the day, that's on them, right? It's not on me. It's on them. And I'm not going to let it bother me. And, you know, and maybe there's even an element of like, well, good for them, right? They're living their dream. They're doing their thing. And that's fine. But as for me, I can push for something greater where I can. And yeah, I don't know.
I think also like I try to put myself in his shoes too. Like how would I feel about it? Of course, I'm not Stag Arley or Thelonious Monk. I'm Connor Dempsey, the white guy. But I would, but if faced with some similar quandary, I feel like I'd make the same choice where I'd be thinking, okay, well, it's a living and let's chip away at this problem from the inside. And arguably if I make enough of a living, you know, if you make enough of a living as the guy who's writing these blaxploitation movies, you know, you could secure for yourself this financial security that you would want to have in order to write your niche books about what you really care about and have freedom in the projects you choose and ultimately make better art.
I mean, it may give you a larger platform and from that larger platform, you can incite more change. Or,
you write an Oscar, you win an award or something for maybe not an Oscar, but you win some like award for writing some movie and you go up there and say, by the way, this is bullshit.
You know,
I've spent 15 years writing these shitty movies and I'm finally up here and I choose to say that we can do a whole lot better than this.
Fuck
this statue.
Right.
Fuck all of you. Yeah. I really enjoy movies about creative integrity and about integrity in general, but like the older I get, the more I appreciate the bitter pill that is, the realism of it doesn't always just change overnight. And even movies you watch where like there is overnight change and you're like, oh, that feels so good. You go research it and you're like, oh shit, it didn't happen that way.
Yeah. Right.
You know, it's so I'd much rather a story than this isn't based on any true story, but this is what I like about R-rated films is that they're inherently willing to give audience just ambiguity or moral grayness or not even happy feelings, just sort of, feelings at the end.
Yeah.
That's part of why I think I gravitate to those. It's not only everyone's cursing and, you know, there's more blood or whatever. It's, I feel like an adult is speaking to me and recognizing that I'm an adult.
Yeah.
And that occurred to me earlier tonight too. Like, this is a movie for adults.
Sure.
It really is. Like, you can enjoy it as a comedy, but you're not going to get through the drama scenes. I don't know. Like, I almost don't know if teenagers could enjoy this movie. They're old enough to see it, but I'm not sure they have any appreciation for it unless you're Black. Because if you are not, you don't have the capacity probably to understand the thorn in the side that this subject would be for Black people. Mm-hmm. And if you're not an adult, I don't think you really have any appreciation for like the financial situations or family situations that Monk is in as someone with an aging parent or, a sibling that dies, you know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
Like in that way, like you can't appreciate the position he's in. 'Cause you're like, what's a professor? I have one of those.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know what it's like to be dismissed from your job for stupid reasons.
Yeah.
Just for having moral, just for having integrity and having, you know, giving a university student the university promise of a intellectually challenging education. So, all that to say, really appreciate this. I'm really glad that Cord Jefferson got the adapted screenplay award. And I think he used his platform, as we said, I think he used it really well to advocate for better, cheaper, and more films like this.
Yep. Agreed.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, man. American Fiction. Go see it.
So what else is going on?
Yep. In my life, personally?
Sure, yeah.
Not much, man. Nothing.
Okay.
Just chilling.
Cool.
Just chilling.
All righty. Well, that'll be it then.
Yeah.
See everybody later. I have no clue what's next.
We'll figure it out.
Wee!
Wee! Freewheeling.
Free balling. Goodbye.
Bye.